Good evening. Let your yeses be yes and your noes be no. You know, this evening I'm going to be talking about us becoming men and women of conviction. Men and women who will stand by the truth regardless of what the ramifications are that we face. And when we say yes, we mean yes, and when we say no, we mean no. Now, the dictionary defines conviction as a strong or fixed belief. But really, conviction is much more than that. It is our conviction that includes our values, our commitments, and our motivations. A belief is something that you're willing to argue about, maybe even compromise on if somebody can make the right argument for it. But a conviction is something that you're willing to die for. That's the difference. And when we have biblical conviction, that is what's essential for our growth, for our maturity. And I think that it's very ironic that people today mistake conviction with convenience, or convenience with conviction. But I think we ought to look at a couple of things in Scripture to see what conviction really is. Turn over to the book of Daniel, chapter 1, verse 8. Daniel, chapter 1, verse 8. Now here we have these individuals that have been taken into captivity, and they're picking out the best of these young Hebrews, and the order given by the king is give them the best food, the best drink, because they had a motive for it. But we're told, but Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice of food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. This young man was determined to remain pure. And even though the king is offering the best, it was not who Daniel was. He could not partake of these things and remain faithful to himself. And so he determined that he wasn't going to do it. Now in those days, what happens if you go against the king's wishes? Well, the king had all the power, enough to put him to death if it was his desire. After all, what is it for a mere mortal to disrespect the wishes of the king? And in those days, most kings almost saw themselves as gods. How dare you? How dare you question the king? Now, again, in Daniel, we have another story of conviction. We have the story of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. So in Daniel 3, verse 12, the king has built this great idol, and everyone was required to bow down and pray to it when the music was played. But these three young men, we're told in verse 12, that there are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up. And then Nebuchadnezzar, in a rage and anger, gave order to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up?" Now, if you are ready at this moment, you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the lyre, the bagpipes, and all kinds of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast in the midst of the furnace, a blazing fire, and what God is there that can deliver you. Now listen to the response of these men. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace and blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king." Those are some pretty strong words. But even more conviction is what they say next. "But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your God or worship the golden image that you have set up." Point blank, they tell the king, "We know that our God is able to deliver us from whatever punishment you're going to give us. God will deliver us from that." But then they add with true conviction by saying, "And even if he doesn't, we will not bow down to your golden image." That's conviction. That is knowing what is true and standing by the truth regardless of what the punishment is going to be. And they very well knew what it was going to be. The king had told them, "You're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace." And these men were confident that God was going to save them. But even more confident to the point that they say, "Even if he doesn't, we are still not going to bow down and worship the golden idol." Because they knew who they were. They understood what God was all about. They understood what they had been trained in since youth about the providence of God, about how to worship God correctly. And even if it meant their lives, they were not going to give in. They were convicted of whom they had believed in. Now we've got in the book of Acts, right after the church is founded, in Acts 5, verses 27 through 29. It says, "When they brought them up," we're talking about Peter and the apostles, "said the high priest questioned them, saying, 'We gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us.' But Peter and the apostles answered, 'We must obey God rather than men.'" So what we have to remember is that Peter and the apostles had just seen Jesus crucified and put to death. And they knew, because they had been warned not to preach in his name. And yet, here they are. They were not swayed by what the Sanhedrin had to tell them. They knew that they had to continue preaching the word of God. And as they said, "Do we obey God or do we obey men?" They were steadfast in their conviction. They could have compromised and said, "Well, we won't preach in Jerusalem. We'll go preach somewhere else where people are ready to receive the message." But that's not what they did. The instructions that were given to them was to teach all nations. and they started in Jerusalem. And they would not be deterred because they knew it was more important to be obedient to God than to be obedient to man. Because after all, what can man do to you? Once they take your life, what can they do to you? Nothing. That's all they can do is take your life. But these men were looking beyond this life to where they were going to spend eternity. And they understood the importance of being to standing firm to their conviction. And they understood it was more important to obey God than to obey man. That's the kind of strength that we as Christians should be looking at and putting into practice in our lives. We know what God expects of us. We know it's not going to be easy. And so we are determined and we are convicted to do what is right. Now let's turn over to the book of Galatians and we'll take a look at another set of scriptures here. Galatians 2 verses 11 through 14. Galatians 2 verses 11 through 14. And this is when the Judaizers are coming in. And beginning with verse 11 says, "But when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcised. The rest of the Jews joined in his hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in the presence of all, 'If you, being a Jew, live like the Gentiles, and now like the Jews, how is it that you compel the Jews to live as Jews?'" There were two standards that were being set here. One, if you are God's people, you are of the Jews. And even though it had been revealed to Peter that the Gentiles were not being included in God's plan for salvation, he was not convicted to the point that when these other teachers came by, he withdrew himself. To the point that even the other faithful Jews wouldn't say anything to Peter. Even though they knew the truth, especially Barnabas. But Barnabas gets caught up with everything that's going on, that even he starts to follow Peter. Even he starts to waver. And that's why Paul says, confronts Peter, not in private, but publicly, and he tells him that what he is doing is wrong. Because Paul was convicted of the truth. And even though Peter is such an important person in the history of the church, he was not going to be deterred because Peter was doing wrong. And he told him to his face in front of everyone else because they all needed to know that Peter was wrong. That is conviction. How many times have we had issues, and thank goodness in this church we have not, in this work here we have not had problems of that magnitude, but how many times have we noticed in other places where error is being taught, and yet no one does anything about it? The church in San Antonio where Max Lucado preached at one time was a church of Christ. And they have moved so far away from the truth that they no longer think that the name Church of Christ needs to be associated with it because it's too limiting. And I find it difficult to to understand why there were not faithful members there to say, that is wrong. I don't understand why the elders didn't stand up and say, that is wrong. And yet they went along with the changes. Same thing over here. There's another church here in Sugar Land that has the Church of Christ in its name. When they introduced instrumental music, the elders did nothing. Very few of the people that were worshiping there left. Because after all, they compromised. They said, you don't like to be more modern and have this type of music? We're going to have a special service for you. Traditional. And therefore, you don't have to worry about having music in the assembly. We'll have this other service. And evidently they like that because they're still there. Where is the conviction? Where is the conviction to scriptural truth? Conviction is not when we compromise our values. If we compromise our values in truth, in the truth that has been revealed to us, then we don't have conviction. We have a compromise. And unfortunately, that seems to be what a lot of people see, is a compromise. Turn over to the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation, chapter 3, beginning with verse 15. Revelation 3, beginning with verse 15. In Revelation 3, we have the letters to the various churches. And here we have the message to Laodicea. It says, I know your deeds, that you are neither hot, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. This church was in compromise. Not faithful to the truth, but not completely departed from the truth. Somewhere they found a blend that worked for everyone. And it was acceptable, they thought. And God tells them, you know, better that you're cold, and that way I know where you stand. But lukewarm, where do you stand when you're lukewarm? You're neither to the right, you're neither to the left. You're not standing firm for the truth. We'll shake and we'll bend to whatever requirements there are to keep the membership happy. Is that one of the things that we should be doing here at Murphy Road? Is we have different individuals here. We have different backgrounds. We even have individuals that have come from different denominations. So, to make it pleasant to them, do we compromise on the truth? Do we want to say, well, you know, when we talk about the truth that's in the scriptures, somebody may find that offensive. And we'd rather keep that individual in our fold, and hopefully, over the grand plan of things, it's eventually they will learn the truth and they will obey the gospel and stand firm in the truth. Or do we say, the truth is the truth? It's not what I think. It's not what you think. It's what the scriptures reveal. And we must be honest to that. And we must stand firm in that. And we must not waver from that. Because the minute we do, we begin to fall short. Now the final reference I've got here is in Matthew 26. Verse 39, and this is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. He understands that the end is near. And in Matthew 26, verse 39, he says, he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. You know, we sing a song that says, he could have called 10,000 angels, and they would have been there for him. And for all of us who understand the scriptures and understand the story of everything that Christ has gone through, he remains faithful to the end. And even here, where he asked God, you know, if it's possible, take this cup away from me. He realizes it's not what God had planned for him, but it was not my will, Lord, but thou will. Your will be done. And it's very hard for us to understand that Jesus is God. And yet he allowed all these things to happen to him, even to be sent to the cross on trumped up charges, to suffer all the pain that went with it. And we know that at any point he could have said no. He could have said, I am God. This creation is not worth my time or effort. But that is not what God the Father had in mind. Because he was going to offer a plan of salvation, and Jesus is going to cost you your life. You're going to be the perfect sacrifice so that through you, all men will be saved. Not just for those living today, but for all yet to be born. That was God's plan. Could he have chosen a different route? Absolutely. But I think that this shows us the conviction that Christ made to die for our sins. Because it is sin that separates us from God. And in the death of Christ, we see the importance of how insignificant we are, that we cannot save ourselves, irregardless of how good we are. Someone had to pay the price. Someone had to be that perfect sacrifice. Not a sacrifice that's offered time and again, but once for all time. And his son was convicted to carry on the mission, irregardless of the price that was required. And the question tonight is, how do we, as a congregation, see ourselves? And sometimes people misunderstand and they believe that convenience is the same thing as conviction. And what I mean by that is that we have a lot of people that consider themselves to be religious. I will go to services. I will give to the work. I will do my part in helping the needy, in carrying my brother's and sister's burden. I will do all this if it's convenient. If it's convenient. Now, I may come to church every time they open the doors, but, you know, I have tickets to the football game. Surely one day, One missing one service is not going to make a difference. So do I come to services because it's convenient for me or because I'm committed? Do we come to worship and sing songs of praises to God because it's convenient? Because after all, you know, it only takes me 10 minutes to get here. Or do we come here irregardless of where we are living, whether it be 5 minutes away or whether it be 30 minutes away? Where is our conviction? Is it conviction or is it convenience? And that's the question that we have to ask ourselves daily. Do we serve God because it's convenient? Do we serve Jesus because it's convenient? Or are we doing the work that we need to be doing because we're convicted of what the Word has to say? Do we live by convenience or do we live by conviction? Do we take a stand for the truth? Or do we say, well, I know that's the truth, but, you know, it's better to keep these brothers happy. I don't want them to see me as someone that is trying to push the truth on them. I'd rather they be my friends than they see me as a person who is so steeped into the Scriptures that he's unwilling to budge from the truth. And that's the thing that we need to assess each and every day, is how do we see ourselves? Are we men and women who are convicted to do and serve the Lord in every way that we have been instructed to? Is the conviction that we have in our faith the motivation for living our lives correctly? Is it what makes us who we are in the decisions that we make, in how we live our lives, and how we represent ourselves to others? And that when the hard times come that we have to make decisions, what do we do? Church discipline is one of the hardest things to do. And if we ever have to do church discipline, how will we address the issue? By the conviction that we have in the truth? Or by trying to sugarcoat it and say, well, maybe we'll do so much, but not everything that needs to be done. Is this the type of men and women that God prefers? That we are going to be so faithful, but only when it's convenient? Or are we going to be convicted? Convicted and stand by the truth, even when everyone else is not with us. Even when we are like the apostles who are being told, don't preach his name in this city. Don't preach the truth. Are we going to stand by it and say, okay, I won't, because I value my life more than preaching the truth? And we are very fortunate to live in this country, because there's a lot of other places in this world that being a Christian sometimes requires you to put your life up for it. Sometimes you're discriminated against only because of your belief. And yet, you hear stories about these individuals, even when they're sentenced to death, that will not renounce what they believe in. What about us? You know, we are so fortunate here. But the day may come when the government says, you can no longer worship in truth. Here are the standards that you live by. And even today, you know, you can not preach about certain things from the pulpit, because that's considered to be hateful, a hate crime. And do we say, well, then we won't preach against those things. We won't preach about those things. That way we don't have to worry about somebody coming in or somebody reporting us to be preaching hatefully. It doesn't work that way. You're either fully committed or you're not. We're either full-time Christians or we're not. It's not like having a part-time job. You can have a part-time job, be part of their company, be part of their activities, be part of the standards that they have, be part of the mission that they have, and it's okay whether you're full-time or part-time. But when we're serving God, it's either we're committed or we're not. We're either convicted of the truth that this is something that we need to be doing, or it's not. And this is one thing that we look to in our lives each and every day, is to make that assessment. Who am I? Can people look at the way I live my life and know that I am a Christian? That they can look at me and say, that individual is different. Am I setting the right example for the people in the world today? We meet so many people in our lifetimes, and sometimes we think we don't make a difference. But believe me, somebody out there sees the things that we're doing. And even though we may never speak to them, by their actions, they will come to know the Lord. But they will only come to know the Lord if we're convicted of what the truth is, of what God requires of us, of the type of men and women that we should be. If you've never obeyed the gospel, you need to reconsider and look into your life. Do that value assessment. Why have I not obeyed the gospel? And if you're of age, this is a very serious question to answer, because we can never be a good worker for the Lord if we haven't obeyed the gospel. We cannot be a good worker for the Lord if we haven't stand on the convictions of remaining faithful and obedient to Christ. Same thing with having sin in our lives. We cannot fool God. We can fool ourselves, we can fool the people in the congregation, we can fool the world, but we're not going to fool God. He knows our hearts. He knows of the sin that we have in our lives. And we need to determine, am I going to put that aside and be convicted to do what is right? To be obedient to God? To be committed to the work here at Mercury Road to spread the message? There's a lot of people in this community that either have a misunderstanding of what it means to be a true Christian, or maybe they have never even heard the word. And it could be somebody that I see every single day of my life and never say anything to them, because I have not been truly committed and convicted of who I need to be. All that could be changed tonight. If anyone is subject to the invitation, I ask you to come and as we stand and sing.